Accession number 28676, Mr. Jack Ball, Reel 5. Now, before we go on with the holding camp at Harrogate, you've remembered one more incident from Mount Hope in Canada that you think of interest.
Yeah.
Can you just tell us about that?
Yes, I think it's of interest in view of later times. We had a Ceylonese sergeant pilot who he was obviously very well brought up and a very nice young lad, and he was refused admission to the local dance hall in Hamilton, Ontario, and the commanding officer, Group Captain Burnett, I think, he placed the whole place out of bounds, and the dance hall proprietors quickly backtracked and allowed us in.
And did you support it? I mean, you were all...
Oh, yeah, sure.
Absolutely in favour.
Yeah.
Now, if we get back...
I don't think anybody was against, quite frankly.
They all supported the action taken.
Yeah, sure.
Now, what about... anything else happened while you were at the holding camp?
Harrogate? Not really, no, I don't think so.
What's your next post? I think
we were posted down to number 20, PAFU. It's an advanced flying unit.
Do you know what's the P? Pilots Advanced.
Pilots Advanced Flying Unit. Kidlington, which is near Oxford. And this was to get us used to flying in British conditions, because they were so different from what we've been lately in Canada.
Did you have any problem with that? I mean,
not particularly, I don't think. It was very different in as much there was a blackout at night, and
it's all right. Now that you were there from November 43 to April 44, according to the notes in your logbook. I mean, that's quite a long time.
That is a long time.
Doing such a relatively simple thing. Do you remember what else you were doing, or was that it?
Well, I was sick at the time, and I spent quite a long time with a strep throat or Quinsy's or whatever it was. A very sore throat. I couldn't eat.
That's a continuation of what happened to you in...
I don't know, quite frankly. But it was very painful, and I had to chew aspirins before I could swallow anything. And I was in and out of sick bay, quite frankly, for I don't know how long, but it interrupted my training quite a bit, which was... going through the full pilot's course, we were flying Airspeed Oxfords, which were quite a handy little aircraft, twins, but...
Do you remember anything in particular? What were the aircraft like? What were they like to fly, compared to, say, the Anson you'd been used to?
Yeah, they were a bit more lively than the Anson, and slightly bit smaller, but they were pleasant enough to fly. When we started there, it was the conditions. We shared the billets with some South African officers and Australian air crew. And the Australian, it was very cold that winter, as all winters were in those days, I think. The Australians tended to burn the anything wooden that they could get hold of, like the steps to the huts and that sort of thing. We used to raid the coke store. We had a coke stove in each room. We were two to a room. And they instituted sun lamp sessions because the South Africans were missing their sunshine, etc. So all in all, it was a strange time. It improved through the springtime, of course. We were there till April, and I have many pleasant memories of cycling around the local countryside, visiting the villages, etc. And one day we had a flying fortress come in with several crew wounded on board, and they were taken off to the sick bay or hospital, and they'd got quite beaten up on one of their daylight operations. From there, we went to on a course which
was that?
That was a 14-day course at Holme on Spalding Moor, which is in Yorkshire, and this was a guided approach course, a beam approach course, and we shared the station with two operational squadrons who were flying Halifaxes, as I recall, and their morale was at a pretty low ebb. They were taking heavy losses, and in Bomber Command, and
did that depress you rather?
Yes, I met a chappie I'd known at Mount Hope, who'd left there sort of a year before me, or some months ahead of me, and he was very depressed about the whole thing. You know, they were sort of counting their operations and calculating the odds against them, which was pretty steep at that time. They were taking heavy losses, as I say. The course itself was interesting. It was excellent. And it was foggy, as I remember, up there, and so it was very realistic as far as we were concerned. Then we went on to Hixon in Staffordshire.
Hixon,
H-I-X-O-N, which was an operational training unit.
Do you know which one?
Number 30. It was in Staffordshire on the Staffordshire Moors or whatever they call them.
And this was what, April? Or had it drifted into May by then?
This was April, 25th of April. And we were there for 3 months.
Now, what exactly were you doing there?
We were flying Wellingtons, and we were doing night bombing and long cross countries.
Training runs, not
Training runs, yeah.
Now, tell me about the Wellington. What was the Wellington's a famous aircraft.
Yeah.
What was it like to fly in comparison with everything else you'd done? Can you give us any detail about the Wellington as an aircraft?
Yeah, it was a good plane to fly.
Why? What was good about it?
Well, it was stable and had no inherent vices, I don't think. There was only one thing about it. The nose, as I recall, came up when you put the flaps down, and that was, although the Oxford was like that, all the aircraft I've been used to up till then, the nose went down when you put the flaps down, which didn't seem much, but I preferred the nose to go down when you put the flaps.
So you had to get used to that, I
presume. Yeah, sure. But, that was a question of flying. I did a lot of beam approach work there.
Now, tell me a bit more about beam approach work in practice. I mean, how did it work?
When you were on the beam, you got a steady tone, and to the right of it, the beam, you got a didar or something like that, and to the left of the beam, you got a broken tone, yeah.
And this would take you to your airfield?
Yeah, it took you to the beacon, which was near at the airfield. And I used that a lot because I wanted to practice it. And the conditions at night were such that with my eyesight, I preferred to be guided by the instruments. I was quite good on instruments, I think, offhand.
Now, what about, is this where you formed a crew up, or would that be at a later stage?
That's right, yes. We were all thrown in together, the pilots and navigators and bomb aimers and gunners, etc. And it was quite informal, the crewing up. I approached a young, boyish-looking navigator who agreed to join me.
Do you remember his name?
Oh, Gordon Foote, yes. he was my navigator for 3 years.
And what rank was he? A sergeant? Was he a sergeant crew?
Yeah.
You saved me asking everyone.
Yeah, well, there were some flight sergeants amongst them. The Aussies tended to be... The next guy I approached was...
What was Gordon Foote like? Just give us a little pen portrait of each.
He was very short, slight, schoolboyish. He could actually pass as a schoolboy if he wore shorts on the buses, etc., which was important in those days. I'm still in touch with him. He's the only one that... has survived, as far as I know.
And he was a your personality blended well. You got on well with him well.
Yes, he was a quiet lad. And
is that what you were looking for in the crew? Someone who was quiet lads, or were you looking for the best? I was
looking for the best, but you suddenly thrown amongst this. Crowd and I was quite unprepared for it, and so the next guy I approached was a Australian flight sergeant who had a navigator's badge up, but he was actually a bomb aimer.
And what was his name?
That was Michael O'Connor.
And what was he like?
He was a big sandy haired Australian. When I say big, he was as big as me. He was about 36 years old, so 37 years old. So
that's quite old then.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, he was, because the other guy, the Gordon Foote, was about 19, I think, 18 or 19. So he was quite elderly, as far as I was concerned.
What was he like?
He was calm, imperturbable, I would say. He claimed to have been in a West Australian regiment that had been disbanded for insubordination. So I don't know how true that was, quite frankly. He tended to pull your leg a bit, but... He was a great guy, and I came to rely on him quite a bit. his experience, etc.
And he was a bomb aimer, but he was also a navigator.
Yeah, it's a handy combination. So he could presumably navigate, and but he'd been funneled into bomb aiming.
Who's next?
I was approached by two gunners who were sort of a pair. They'd been trained in, they'd gone through training in South Africa, and one of them was called Bob Job.
And the sergeant. Other,
yeah, they were sergeants. Mike O'Connor was a flight sergeant.
Bob Job, J-O-B.
J-O-B, yeah, Bob a Job.
And he was a rear gunner, or just rear gunners?
They were gunners, but he chose the rear turret, and which I was quite grateful for, because he had good eyesight. And the other guy was...
So he'd be the mid-upper?
Yeah, the other guy was Patrick O'Malley. Who was a bit of a dead loss as far as I was concerned.
But in what way? How did he
He tended to be sleepy. And you can't afford that in an aircraft. And he had his girlfriend over from South Africa, I think. And she obviously had money, and he was inclined to be wayward unreliable, I would say. Unreliable.
Anyone else in your crew?
Yes, the...
wireless operator.
The wireless operator. I asked the... Mike O'Connor to... see if I asked him whether he knew any good wireless operators, and he said, "Well, I'll get you a good Aussie one." So he went away, and he came back with this young, fresh-faced lad who was about another 18 or 19.
What was his name?
I'm just trying to remember. I know it, of course, but.
And we just looked at the last one. It's Peter.
Peter McGill, MCGILL.
And also a flight sergeant, Australian, or
no? He was sergeant.
He was just a sergeant. And what was he like?
He was very good. He was. He used to worry a lot, I think. And
nervy, you mean? Or
yeah, nervy. In as much that. He used to. The bomb aimer reported to me that Peter used to sit on the main spar, which was the strongest part of the Lancaster, and calculate each time then the odds against us completing the tour. You know.
Just checking. You said Lancaster. It's the Wellington you're doing it at the moment. You switched to the Lancaster later.
Oh yeah, sorry. Yeah.
No,
sure.
No, it's no problem. Mm-hmm. Now, as a crew, how did you? I mean, did you make a real effort to blend together by socialising together in the early stages, or did you just fly together?
I made an effort to socialise, but of course I used to go out with the navigator. And of course we were in camp, so that... and we were flying together, so... You know, it was it wasn't question of making an effort, really. It's you were naturally thrown together.
Now you were flying, so you were doing two sorts of flying. One was night bombing exercises, and the other was cross country. Now, I don't know which one you wanted. Perhaps cross country. What were the cross country exercises like? Once you got used to it, I presume this was quite easy for you, in the sense that you'd done so much of it in Canada.
Yeah, this was fairly easy for me, as in the final flight, I think, was a leaflet dropping trip to Holland, when we had an engine cut out over the North Sea somewhere, because the mid-upper gunner, Patrick O'Malley, had kicked the fuel cock off, as it turned out. He was asleep, of course, because he had no mid-upper turret to in the Wellington. They didn't have a mid-upper turret, so he was sort of make weight.
Do you remember anything else about that leaflet? That sort of leaflet drop? Anything? I mean, no. Did you carry out to do it, or did you have to turn back?
Oh no, we pressed it. We found out what the trouble was, and fairly soon, because it was just an engine cut out, and having cured it, we turned the fuel back on. We pressed on. But as I say, I used to do lots of beam approach stuff, because I figured that would be important.
What about the pretend, but well, the practice bomber at bombing range night? But what were they like? What would you do?
Well, we would very rarely drop bombs. We would normally the end point where you turn back was a demonstration of target indicators. In other words, the fireworks that they dropped to mark the target area. And it was a question of identifying them, and that was the end of it, sort of thing. That was quite interesting. It's the first time I'd seen a target indicator, and they were spectacular.
And where would this be over? Isolated areas of Scotland or something?
Do you know, I can't remember where it was. I remember seeing them go down, but I quite honestly don't know where they were.
Anything else?
It was just the end point of the
now, anything else about your time with the OTU?
No, not really.
So lots of beam approach work.
That was private, you know. I was doing that.
You took the crew with that.
Yeah, I took the crew, but it was incidental, because wherever we were going, we were coming back to the same airport, and I would usually make a beam approach to it.
So what happens next then?
Next thing, we went on to Thorn Waste.
What?
Thorne. Waste is Waste.
And where's that?
It's
roughly.
It's north of Doncaster.
So Yorkshire.
Yeah, it's Yorkshire. It's definitely Yorkshire. Robin, no, that was the pub.
And what unit were you joining there?
Oh, we went to Boston Park first, sorry. Boston Park.
What were we doing at Boston Park?
Which was just a holding unit. And
how long were you there for? Just July, or?
This is July 44. And we were there for a week, apparently. And what was memorable about that time was that the divisions were rolling south to reinforce the invasion. And Boston Park was situated by the main road south, I guess, and, whatever it was. And we saw the armoured columns going, troops going. They were largely Polish, I think, the troops we saw.
So what was the unit you were joining at Thorny Waste?
That was 1667 Heavy Conversion Unit at a place called Sandtoft, actually.
So not Thorny Waste?
No, it was on Thorny Waste, which is a big area of rough ground, you know. So it was Sandtoft from 21st of July 44 till 26th of August 44. And I'd gone around with pilots. Pilots tended to stick together, quite frankly, because they were a different rank to the they were nearly all pilot officers at that time, and the rest of the crew weren't commissioned. So you tended to...
Now, had you got a commission by this time then? We hadn't covered that. We'd got you as a sergeant pilot, I think, still.
Yeah, well, I was a warrant officer pilot by this time. Sorry, I'd gone up through the ranks to flight sergeant and warrant officer. So I was a warrant officer, and which meant that there was a certain amount of clamour to join my crew, thinking that I knew more than anybody else. So, it was very useful. I was excused sort of gym and gymnasiums and that sort of thing, because the flight sergeant in charge didn't want to have a senior officer or outranking him. So I was a warrant officer at Thorn Waste, and no, I was promoted. I was commissioned at. At Boston Park, I think.
So just before you got to Sandtoft?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was Boston Park. I was commissioned from warrant officer to pilot officer.
Now, what difference did that make?
Well, I moved into the officer's mess. And the conditions were a lot better, obviously. And you were given a uniform allowance to buy your uniform. They gave you a bank account. They put you down for a bank account if you didn't have one. And I didn't have one at the time. I think they were all Lloyds Bank, Cox and Kings. Cox and Kings, which sounds very flash.
So that had happened. Now, you said you mix with pilots a lot. You more than your own crew, then?
I tended to socialise with pilots because there was a strict hierarchy in the Air Force, you know, as much that you were in the officer's mess and you... It wasn't as bad as the other services, I don't think, but there was still a certain amount of ranking involved. And I mixed with... I had two special friends, so...
Who were they?
Taff Edwards. And Jock...
Don't worry too much. I mean, Jock.
Yeah, Jock. Well, I've got them somewhere. So we tended to go out drinking of an evening or socialising or whatever, and these were two congenial blokes. think they were both a similar background to me. And when we went to